I am Patrick Yost, National President of Fraternal Order Police. This is the Blue View. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us on a Blue View podcast. And welcome. You're a longtime member of the Fraternal Order Police, but in addition to that, you just recently assumed the position of Executive Director of the Memorial Fund. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Pat, President Yost, I should call you. President from Fraternal Order Police. Of course, I am... just recently, as you noted, got appointed as the CEO of the Memorial Fund. Before that, I got hired initially as the executive director of the Memorial Pillar of the Memorial Fund. Before that, I served 25 years with the Prince George's County Police Department, which I'm sure, as you know, borders D.C. to the east. It's a relatively large department, about 1,700 SWORD members, and I worked my way up. I was a rank-and-file street officer. I joined to actually do police work. I love nothing more than responding to 911 calls. I mean, I really loved being on the street. Even now, I can't imagine, there's no other job that I can even think of where as one individual, you have such power to influence and impact both an individual's life and a broader segment of the community in which you're serving. I mean, there was just no more fulfilling thing in my life than pursuing police work. And before the Prince George's County Police Department, I had joined the Air Force. Ironically, I was just telling the story the other day. I signed up and my recruiter convinced me that this job came open. It never comes open. It was loadmaster, where you load seed fives and balance them out before they fly. But it actually was a pretty rare job and it would have been amazingly spectacular. In hindsight, I wish I had taken the loadmaster job. But I was 19 years old and all I wanted to do was be the police. And I said, no, if you can't get me a law enforcement slot in the Air Force, I'm not going to sign. So they somehow find a law enforcement slot. So I started in the Air Force. Of course, I joined in part to go see the world. I grew up in Northern Virginia. I got stationed at Andrews Air Force Base, closest Air Force Base to my house, which was good and bad. I could have gone to, say, North Dakota and been sitting on nuclear missile silos. So it was close to home. But in a perfect world, 19, you hope to go to Germany or Hawaii or somewhere slightly more exotic. But the reality is that even from my earliest days, I was doing to some degree a little bit of police work, but mostly it was gate guard duty on the front gate of Andrews Air Force Base. But standing there, I could see what was very clearly real police work happening just outside of Andrews Air Force Base. And of course, I'm not saying that to disparage or denigrate military police officers who are also doing, our role, but there's a very clear distinction between
the next transition
between being a police officer in the Air Force versus being real police. And so I knew I wasn't going to stay in beyond 4 years, and 3.5 years in, I started aggressively applying. At the time, unfortunately, not on, completely different from today, but at the time, to get a police officer spot, it was very, very competitive. I mean, I applied and there were thousands of people applying for every single spot, and I was incredibly lucky to have gotten a spot with Prince George's County Police, and here I am.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank
for
you.
Military service. Some of our viewers might not quite understand the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. So just take a couple of minutes and kind of walk us through what the fund is and what the role is.
Sure. Well, I suspect certainly your audience and perhaps maybe not just outside of your audience, most people are probably aware broadly of then President Kennedy in 1962 declaring May 15th as Peace Officers Day, National Peace Officers Day.
You know what that day is?
It's the day
the Fraternal Order Police started in 1915.
That's not a coincidence.
I should have known that
because you just gave me a book with the FOP history. So I apologize. I haven't gotten to the book yet. But so he declares May 15th and the week that follows as Police Week. And my general understanding is that in the years that follow, particularly into the 70s, there begin to be some informal gatherings, particularly at the Capitol. Not heavily attended, but certainly
1982,
thought about by the Fraternal Order Police and concerns of police survivors. And those gatherings began to grow. And sort of my feeling is that the sentiment was then that we in the profession, I hope your audience won't begrudge me still saying words like we, us, our, when I think of what is still our profession, right? I think that there was a sentiment in the profession and probably echoed by the FOP that we as a profession were falling short in terms of recognizing the service and sacrifice of too many. And so in part through efforts with the FOP and cops and others, most notably Congressman Biagi and Senator Appel, they began work to get some legislation passed to hopefully start the seed of an actual national memorial to commemorate the men and women who were dying in the line of duty. And I know that they started that in the late 70s and couldn't really gain ground. And finally, in the early 80s, they did get some bipartisan support. And in 1984, legislation passed, signed by Congress, which allowed for the creation of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. What lots of people don't really know is that the fund really only was able to start by some very key seed money, some of which donated by the Fraternal Order of Police, some by Concerns of Police Survivors. But without that seed money, I don't know that we would be here today. And without the support of those initial organizations, notably the Fraternal Order of Police, again, I don't know that the monument and the national memorial that we have today would exist without having had that initial support. So thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing place. You go there any other time and, you know, those walls have names engraved in it and you look at it and it's a beautiful place. You go there during police week and those names come alive.
They do.
The whole memorial does. Talk about that, because it is truly an amazing place during police week. It just transforms into something completely else, completely different. You know, every name turns into a face and a story, and it just place comes alive.
It really, really does. You know, there's something that's very, very difficult to put even in words to when you're describing, at least for me, certainly as a guy who's been in the profession. During my 25 years with the Prince George's County Police Department, we lost 16 of my peers. So I am no stranger to the loss associated with a fallen police officer. I'm no stranger to candlelight vigils and prior ceremonies. And every single, I walk those walls almost every single day. And it's astonishing how many times as I'll be walking and just out of the corner of my eye, one of the names of someone I knew will come to the forefront. It's really uncanny. But Police Week is sort of that writ large. It's a time and place for all of us in the profession, and what I would argue is all of us as citizens of what I still think is the greatest country in the history of the world, to come together and remember, to honor, to celebrate the lives of the men and women who gave everything in service of us and their communities in this country. And it's really, it's a very unique, I would argue, cathartic healing soup. That whole time during Police Week, you're absolutely right. It comes alive in a way that is almost indescribable. And it's more than just healing and grief. It's also a celebration of the men and women who served and sacrificed. And it's a celebration of our profession, the men and women who are still out there doing the job.
It's also celebrating the families. We talk about the sacrifice of the officers, but the families have sacrificed so much. Coming to Police Week, coming to that memorial, this is kind of a long journey from losing their loved ones to local events to coming to Washington. It is all part of some closure and trying to make some sense of something that is senseless. Trying to wrap your arms around the sacrifice and loss of a loved one, and it's sort of a healing.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. So let's transition that into Candlelight Vigil. It was not long after the memorial was built, they started a Candlelight Vigil, which is a very moving event in itself. Talk about it.
Well, the Candlelight Vigil, again, is one of those events that I think every citizen of this country should come to and experience at least once. You just cannot put into words the feeling in the air, just the cathartic, overwhelming, celebratory, and also honoring the men and women whose names are on those memorial walls. And obviously, the Candlelight Vigil each year is to memorialize the names most recently added. Right. So in 2023, we added 556 names. The year before that, we added 619, but in 2023, we had the Candlelight Vigil, and all 556 names were read aloud, as they are every single year, all of the names. But it's more than just reading the names. It's acknowledging the profession writ large. It's acknowledging the loss. It's to some degree celebrating the lives of the men and women who chose to enter a profession and chose to put themselves in harm's way in service of their communities in this country. And what I would argue is, I hope it's a way for the country to momentarily put a pen in the collective conscience of this country to say there has been and continues to be a cost in preserving our democracy. And that cost every single year is tragically borne out by the lives of hundreds of men and women in uniform. Yep. And I hope to some degree that the Candlelight Vigil serves as that very vivid reminder for everyone in the country.
And when somebody gives the ultimate sacrifice in the service of others, we have a responsibility to make sure that their memories are not forgotten.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that memorial wall and everything associated with it is, if I'm not mistaken, 22, 23,000 names.
Today, right now, there are 23,785 names. And of course, I always add an asterisk and say, and counting, because as you know, it's a living memorial. And this coming spring in 2024, we will undoubtedly add another at least 150 names that we know about already.
Yeah. You know, look at the memorial fund. You look at Police Week, the way it's evolved. I think it's awesome. That first memorial, Police Memorial, was in 1982, and there were roughly 130 people or so were there. And of that 130, probably 70 of them were a Boy Scout troop that was walking by when they had that first service. So you look at what it's grown, you know, from that very first humble beginning to where it is now. Probably, I know our service, we estimate that there's probably 30 plus thousand people at it. I know the candlelight vigil is at that number or even higher. But I think it's a very special, journey for people to come to Police Week, whether they lost a loved one or whether you're in part of this profession, or even, you know, just visitors to celebrate the life of, recognizing that the quality of life that we all share in this amazing country, although it has its, you know, challenges, it's still, as you said, better than any place else. And we need to recognize that, that all of that comes with a price. And, there is something special about Police Week. Police Week is not just, the candlelight vigil. It's not just our memorial service. It's not just cops doing the workshops that they do with the survivors. It really has evolved into a whole week of celebration of life and honor. From your perspective, it evolve.
You know, it's, even from my earliest days, I joined the Prince George's County Police Department in 97. So my first candlelight vigil was in 1998. I didn't attend every single year, but easily more than a dozen I attended. And even now, I know, you know, Craig Floyd, the founding CEO, I still hear his voice resonate in my head when I think about those prior candlelight vigils, because for so many years, his was the voice that was coming out of those speakers. But it really has been amazing to watch Police Week unfold over the last 20, 25 plus years, as exactly as you noted. It definitely started out in smaller numbers. I mean, the original candlelight vigils were held at the memorial.
At the memorial.
So it would be a few hundred to a few thousand people.
Which by the way, was an amazing, it's restricted because it's surrounded by buildings and courthouses. So it's a small footprint, but it was amazing because the sounds would bounce off of those buildings and just had a very undescribable feeling.
Yeah, there was something really unique about having it at the memorial that made it really memorable, and the blue laser light that would shine across. Right. There was something really special there. But as you've noted, and we're both talking about, the sizes of the crowds now, there's just no way it could possible. This past year we had something just over 40,000 people attend on the National Mall for our candlelight vigil, and you just could not do that at the memorial anymore. But, you know, Police Week, as exactly as you've noted, it's more than just our sort of signature events like the cops conference and the memorial service you hold at the Capitol and our candlelight vigil. It's everything in between. It's the Canine Memorial. It's the Emerald Society's marching bands.
It's Unity Tour coming in.
It's the Police Unity Tour riding in after they've ridden from hundreds of miles all up and down the East Coast. It's the conclusion of your memorial service with the two wreaths, where every single surviving family has placed a single special rose into one of those wreaths. And then the wreaths are brought back to the memorial. And then we have honor guard teams stand watch over those wreaths for the next 12 hours. I mean, there's so many events. It's Tent City, hosted by the FOP. It's just, it's indescribable. If you have anyone listening to this, if you have not come to a Police Week, whether you are in law enforcement or not, you owe it to yourself. I would argue you owe it to your country to come see what the men and women who are protecting you do to celebrate their fallen and also celebrate their profession.
Bill, I've always said, I encourage people to come. You're right. I said, you got to come once, but I need to give you a warning. You come once, you will be back more than once.
That no truer
it,
statement.
It is very contagious. You know, so we talked about Police Week. And as Police Week gets closer, I'd love to have you back and we'll talk more about the schedule.
Absolutely.
We'll bring cops in as well and talk about all the preparations it takes in order to, you know, have a small army of volunteers to transform what we do into a week of honor. And we'll come back to that one. But there are a lot of things that the, you know, we only touched on honor, really, which is the mission of the Memorial Fund, is to pay honor to our fallen. But also there are some other pillars as well. Let's talk about the Memorial Fund, the things that it does on, you know, every day.
Sure.
Museum.
Yeah. Well, the Memorial Fund, we break it into what we refer to as pillars. So there is the first pillar, and to me, one of the certainly the most important, which is honor the fallen, and that right. is the memorial. The second pillar is our world-class museum, which is right here in Washington, D.C. in Judiciary Square. It's right across from the memorial. So anyone who has not been to the museum, please come see this really amazing place. It's the place where we as an organization try to tell the story of American law enforcement. And it's also a place where visitors can sort of metaphorically walk in the shoes of a man or woman in uniform to really get a sense of how powerful even a single police officer can be, and I would argue is, in the communities that they're serving. Yeah. And our third pillar is what we refer to as officer safety and wellness. It's where we as an organization try to, in part, take some of the data related to those line of duty deaths that gives us a window into the how, where, why officers are facing such tragic outcomes each year, but also in part and parcel, but also independent of that, us thinking about, talking about, crafting, creating, collecting programs and best practices from across the country and trying to push those out in a meaningful way to turn that risk dial down. We use the phrase to try to keep names off of the wall, right. To make it safer for the men and women who are serving, and by extension, make it safer for members of the public that they're sworn to protect. So that, in broad strokes, is the Memorial Fund.
You know, you look at kind of the journey of the last few years. This has been a very difficult time for law enforcement. You start off with a pandemic and then all of the unrest and the challenges to law enforcement, from defunding to reimagining and kind of where we are now. And it's created a very dangerous time. I mean, you look at our numbers so far while we're recording this, although it won't air for a little while, you know, probably a couple of weeks, we already have matched the amount of officers shot in the entire year last year. And we still have 6 weeks or so to go. This is a very dangerous time for law enforcement. Some major challenges we have. But it's also been major challenges for the Memorial Fund as well, if just in sheer numbers. Average year, we used to average about 130 or so law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty. And then after 9/11, illness was classified, and then Hometown Heroes, and then you add to that COVID. I mean, got some unbelievable numbers of the amount of people we're honoring each year. It's almost doubled. It's actually exceeded double.
Yes.
Where we were before. And it has those unique challenges as well.
Well, I would say on the first part, I think right now to be a law enforcement officer in the United States this is the most difficult time to be a law enforcement. And I would argue in the history of our country.
Yeah.
I just don't think anyone could really steel man to me some argument that somehow rebuts the idea that in every angle, law enforcement has been and continues to be under attack, whether that is from our news media, popular media, social media, and what I would argue is, to a worrying degree, even too many of our elected officials who seem to demonize, again, what I still see as our profession.
And less interested in a solution than they are the problem.
Yeah, and I really do think that it has fueled continued attacks towards law enforcement, and I absolutely agree that it's making the conditions on the road much, much more dangerous for the men and women who are doing the job.
So that leads me into, and the reason why I bring that up is because let's talk about we're dealing with a challenge in this country, an existential threat to our profession that we've never experienced, not at the level that we have now. And that is we can't get the best and brightest to take this job at a level we need to sustain it. Those numbers have dropped off. So we have a recruiting and retention problem across this country that is not going to fix itself overnight. And so let's talk about the role that the museum, yeah. our noble profession, of recognizing our noble profession, how it can play in helping change attitudes towards law enforcement, because we've been demonized by so many that's really what our problem is. Our problem is people don't want to take this job because of the damage that's been done during this time. In reality, there's 800,000 men and women who suit up and show up every day and make a difference in the lives of the people they serve. And some logic is missing there. Let's talk about the role that the museum can play in recognizing, honoring our noble profession.
Yeah, that's such a great point, and I could not agree more. To me, the existential crisis facing law enforcement today is recruitment and retention. every single police department that I'm aware of is undermanned, understaffed, underfunded. Just as an example, Prince George's County Police, where I left, they're authorized 1,800. And when I left, they were at 1,500 and dropping fast, yeah, with retirements far outpacing new hires. So I absolutely agree. I think it is the number one issue. And even since my earliest days, I was so impressed with the museum, because the way that the museum does tell that story of American law enforcement does nothing but honor the profession. Every single exhibit in the museum showcases where law enforcement has done something right, has done something good, has contributed back to the communities that they're serving, and obviously this country. We have school groups come through all the time. Part of our message at the museum, particularly the young people, is, hey, law enforcement is not perfect, but we are working towards perfecting our communities. And if you think there is a problem with law enforcement, first of all, come into this museum and see, yeah, the history of this place before you judge it without really understanding it. And then second, if you think you can do even better, please come, yeah, join the ranks. Join the police department.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't have to be Prince George's County. It doesn't have to, yeah, be DC. Go back to your hometown in the Midwest. Join our ranks and be part of the solution. Whether the problem you perceive to be a problem is real or not, come be a part of the profession. Come join us.
Let's talk about, it's common knowledge. The Memorial Fund has had some challenges over the years.
It certainly has.
You know, it's funding. We're in a city here where there's museums in every corner, and you've got a police museum that's, just trying to make all these things fit. Let's talk about some of those challenges and what we could see, what you envision on the horizon for the Memorial Fund.
Well, there's no question that we are facing some challenges as an organization, certainly fiscally. The long tail of COVID and inflation has certainly impacted us. As you noted, over the last 2 years specifically, 556, and the year before, 619 names. Each of those names, in terms of the behind-the-scenes work, the man hours that go into researching those cases, the actual engraving, which includes templating out all of the names on the wall, that costs us about $1,000 per name. And so, as you noted, it went from, yeah, about 150 to triple that. We've certainly incurred some higher costs, and our revenue coming in and our donations from across the country has also gone down by virtue of the COVID and inflation and on and on. So we certainly are facing some financial challenges, and I wish that the museum was more well attended, but we are right here in the heart of Washington, D.C., and you can't throw a rock without hitting a dozen world-class museums all around you. You know, part of my vision for the future is really re-engaging not just the law enforcement audience, but the broader audience all across America, trying to say to them, hey, there's something of value here. There's something more than just educational. Come experience something that you probably, particularly if you don't have a connection to law enforcement, please come here and really begin to get a sense of what it is to be a member of our profession. And also engaging our corporate partners and saying, hey, part of your ability to make money in this country is law and order, your ability to function on a day-to-day basis. And I might argue, hey, you have some responsibility to help us tell the story and engage our young, hopefully young audience, and encourage them to join this profession so that your business continues to be profitable and our country continues to grow and be safe. So I have a lot of irons in the fire, and I'm very confident about the future, but I also don't want to, you know, pull the wool over in anyone's eyes. We certainly, for those in the audience who have some means to give to a charitable organization, I might argue that the Memorial Fund is a worthwhile such organization. And if someone has a spare few bucks, we would be delighted to take that money in to help fulfill our mission of, yep, honoring the fallen and telling their story.
And here we are at the end of the year, and people are making their donations to get their tax deductions. So if somebody wants to know more about the museum, more about how to support the Memorial Fund, how would they go about that?
Well, the easiest way would just be to go to our website, which is NLEOMF.org. That's NLEOMF.org. Or if they have a specific question for, say, me, they can shoot me an email. My email is balexander@NLEOMF.org. That's B as in boy, Alexander@NLEOMF.org. Anyone out there in the audience, if you've got a question or a concern, something related to the Memorial Fund, or you just want to chat, shoot me an email. I'd be thrilled and honored to correspond with your audience.
Bill, I appreciate it. I appreciate all that the Memorial Fund does. It's the Fraternal Order of Police is proud to be a part of that. And it's all of us, the way that Police Week has evolved in, well, the memorial services evolved into Police Week, where everyone's doing their celebration of life and just honoring our fallen is just something that's very heartwarming. And you're right. If you come here once, you're coming back again. This is a
absolutely.
This whole city turns into something completely different during Police Week. So, Bill, I give you a chance. Any closing thoughts?
Well, I know I'm to some degree preaching to the choir in terms of your audience, but there's a quote on the southwest corner of the memorial. Well, there's actually four quotes on the memorial that I know you know. In the southeast is in valor, there is hope. In the northeast, it says the wicked flee when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion. In the northwest corner is a quote that resonates so much with survivors. It's not how these officers died that made them heroes. It's how they lived. And in the southwest corner is the quote that always has held the most resonance for me, uttered by Bush in 1991 when the memorial is commemorated, says, "Carved on these walls is the story of America, of a continuing quest to preserve both democracy and decency and to protect a national treasure that we call the American dream." And I say that in part to your audience to say the memorial exists more than just to honor our fallen. While certainly that is a central pillar of our organization, the memorial also exists to honor our profession, the men and women who are still doing the job right now. Your audience today, I know, are the valorous, the bold, are the very same men and women who are making purposeful, conscious decisions today, right now, to put themselves in harm's way, taking those heroic actions. In your audience today are the very same men and women who are working to preserve our democracy and keep our country safe. And so for the men and women in the profession, I say, thank you. Thank you for still being willing and able to do this job. Thank you for contributing and giving back to our country. And for anyone who's watching who's not in law enforcement, I would say, I hope this resonates with you to some degree. I hope it piques your interest and hopefully reminds you that men and women in uniform are dying in service of us every single year. And I think the least of our, as citizens, our obligation is to find your closest police officer and say, thank you. Yeah. Thank you, sir or ma'am, for your service. Thank you for what you're doing. And most importantly, I support you. So that is my message to your audience.
It's easy to take this cycle of life for granted. The things that just the norms that we have every day. And it's easy to forget the fact that it's the sacrifice of our military and our first responders that bring us this quality of life. Bill, thank you very much. And thank you for all that you do for the Memorial Fund.
Pat, I am a proud card-carrying member of the Fraternal Order of Police, and I want to publicly thank you. Thank you for everything that you and your organization are doing. For so many years, I looked to national FOP and what were the interests of the day. And even now, you know, every single day, I know you and your team are in here fighting for the rights of the men and women in uniform, and I am incredibly grateful. And so on behalf of a grateful profession, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And to our viewers and listeners back home, I thank you for tuning into the Blue View, where we talk about the issues that are so vitally important to the men and women who suit up and show up every day in communities across this country. Thank you.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. To get the latest from the National FOP, make sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook at GLFOP and on Instagram at FOP National. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.